Welcome to Market Matters, our markets podcast on Making Sense, the hub for JP Morgan corporate and investment bank podcasts. In each episode of Market Matters, we discuss the latest news and trends shaping markets today.
Hi, I'm Eloise Goulder, head of the Data Assets and Alpha Group here at JP Morgan. And today I'm really pleased to be sitting down with Chris Andrew, who is head of market structure based in London here at JP Morgan, for what is actually our third conversation together on this podcast series. So, Chris, thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thank you, Eloise. It's lovely to be here.
So, Chris, you and I have long discussed the decline in European turnover ratios and liquidity over the last 8 years or so. So, can you start by setting the scene and explaining how this picture has evolved?
Of course. So, just for the benefit of listeners who may have missed our previous discussions, when we're talking about turnover ratios, what we're really trying to measure is the rate at which the underlying share capital is changing hands. And we calculate that by dividing the turnover in a group of shares by their value or capitalization. Now, some people might also refer to this as velocity, which makes sense because what we're really talking about is the speed at which those shares are changing hands. And we originally started using that measure because a lot of clients were complaining that it was difficult to trade in Europe due to lack of liquidity. And this was just a way to look at European liquidity both objectively, but also to compare it with other regions. And the answer that came back when we looked at that measure was that turnover ratios have been declining relatively steadily in Europe since 2016, whilst generally rising in the US and Asia Pacific regions. And each time you and I talk, we say we'll come back, we'll check in, and we'll see if there's any sign of these long-term trends, particularly that European decline, reversing or even petering out.
Absolutely. So, Chris, the headline, has anything changed?
No, not really. Since we spoke last year, turnover ratios have continued to decline materially in Europe. This year, so far, European liquidity is flat on 2023, but turnover ratios in the US have bounced back more or less to where they were in 2022. And by the way, I think you and my colleague Claire Witz discussed this on the podcast a couple of weeks back. Turnover ratios have also been increasing in many Asia-Pacific markets. So Europe really does remain a global outlier.
That's fascinating. Thanks. So in the US, we have seen that bounce back in liquidity and turnover ratios, and the trend is higher since 2016. And in Asia, as you say, we've seen an increase in turnover ratios overall, and particularly across China, Japan, India, Korea, and Taiwan. Whereas in Europe, you're just continuing to see this decline in turnover ratios. So, Chris, if we dig beneath the surface of Europe at an index level, are there any pockets where turnover ratios or velocity of trading actually is increasing? And the reason I ask is we often talk about the structural leaders, the globally exposed stocks in Europe, the Magnificent 11 in Europe. Have you at least seen those groups see a stabilization or an increase in liquidity?
No. And, you know, it doesn't really matter which way you cut the data. You see pretty much the same pattern across the board in Europe. All sectors, and even those Magnificent 11 shares that you referred to, the turnover ratios in those have also declined materially over the same period. And that's despite their relatively strong performance.
Wow. So it really is a pretty bleak picture here in Europe then. So can we turn to the US? You mentioned that turnover ratios have bounced back recently, and we've discussed previously that turnover ratios in the US have risen over the last 5 or 10 years. Has that been a uniform increase, just like the uniform decline in European turnover ratios, or is there a bit more nuance to it?
I think the increase in activity in the US has definitely not been uniform. It's really concentrated in the technology sectors, but it also extends well beyond the Magnificent 7 shares that most people are probably familiar with. But let me just try to illustrate the degree of concentration that we're seeing in the US market now and how that contrasts with Europe. So in 2016, the most traded stock by turnover represented about 4% of the overall turnover of the S&P 500. And that was trading about 4 billion a day, so similar to the Netherlands. By 2024, the most traded US stock represents about 13% of S&P 500 trading activity and is trading over $40 billion a day. So to put that in perspective, that one US stock is turning over about the same as all of European stock markets combined.
That is an amazing stat. That's incredible. So one US stock is trading more each day this year than the whole of Europe combined.
Yes, that's right.
That is staggering.
I know, it is, isn't it? And if we look at the concentration more generally, the top 25 stocks in the S&P 500 represent over 50% of all S&P trading activity. Whereas in Europe, the top 25 stocks in the Stoxx 600 represent only 25% of total trading activity. The other thing that I think is interesting is the reversal in the relationship between the concentration of capitalization or value and that of the trading activity. So normally the value of shares is more concentrated than the trading activity, and that's because the larger shares tend to turn over a little more slowly relative to their value. Back in 2016, that was also the case in the US. But around the time of the pandemic, that switched around, and now trading activity is significantly more concentrated than capitalization.
That's fascinating as well, because the normal regime, or the 2016 regime that you refer to, that makes total intuitive sense to me, the idea that the cap concentration is much greater than the liquidity concentration or the turnover concentration. Because when we think about passive investors, they're often overweight mega cap stocks. They're generally overweight the large index weights. And they typically trade less frequently than faster players such as hedge funds or the retail investor. And historically, you think about hedge funds and the retail investor being overweight in smaller cap or mid cap stocks. So it's fascinating to me that that picture has turned on its head.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting as well. And what seems to be causing it, at least in terms of what we see in the data, is that the correlation between a share's capitalization and the amount that it trades or the trading turnover seems to have become much looser than it was. I'm really curious about this though, Louise. What kind of picture do these statistics paint for you in terms of investor behavior and positioning?
It's so fascinating, and it's obviously changed so much in recent years. I mean, on the one hand, it makes me think about the meme stock phenomenon and the idea that investors, whether the retail investor or perhaps also the institutional investor, are really concentrating their efforts and their analysis and their trade ideas on just a relatively small handful of stocks in US markets. And then also, I think it speaks to the concentration risks we're also seeing in performance, best represented in the momentum factor, which has had a phenomenal rally in recent months. So for example, if we look at our long momentum basket in the US, so long the stocks which outperformed last year, they have disproportionately rallied in recent months. They've rallied by more than 40% since markets troughed in late October. So there's this persistence in outperformance. So, Chris, we've covered the facts. We've covered the fact that turnover ratios in the US have continued their upward trend that you've seen since 2016, and notably that concentration in turnover ratios has really increased in recent months and years. So, Chris, can we now turn to the why? I mean, what do you think is really driving these trends, these pretty extreme trends at this stage?
I think one argument that helps explain the concentration in turnover ratios in certain sectors and stocks is performance. I think that's true in general, but it's not perfect. And I think we've seen positive correlation between performance, i.e. stock outperforming, and its turnover ratio. But casual observation at least says that that correlation tends to follow really outsized performance as opposed to just good performance.
Totally. That's really what I was referring to when I discussed the momentum factor, that the momentum has worked as a factor in US markets over a long period of time now. And that reflects concentration in performance. And at the same time, correlated but not exactly the same, you're seeing this increase in concentration in turnover ratios. And actually, put quite simply, you said that tech and communication services are the two major US sectors where turnover ratios have increased over the last 8 years. And by the way, they are also the sectors that have outperformed over the last 8 years. I mean, the S&P 500 tech sector has more than quadrupled over that period.
Yes, I think that all makes sense. And I think the other factor here, which, you know, in a way is possibly linked to those pockets of outsized performance as well, is the presence of the retail investor. Seems really difficult to imagine that the retail investor is not influential here. And a couple of reasons why I think that. One thing I've learned about turnover ratios in the last couple of years is that whenever you see outsized turnover ratios, the humble retail investor is not usually too far away. You and Claire were talking on that podcast a couple of weeks ago about the high levels of retail participation in some Asian markets like Korea, Taiwan, and China. Well, it shows up in the turnover ratios in those markets. And even in Europe, big retail markets like Italy and Turkey exhibit the same thing, high turnover ratios. I know it's a bit counterintuitive, and I don't know if I can fully articulate it, but put simply, whenever you see a lot of trading in something, it's usually not the big guys. It's all the little guys put together. And then I think the other factor that I'd cite, which appears to drive the turnover ratios, is the ability for a stock to have a narrative, or, you know, you and I would maybe just call it a story. And we've talked about this in the past. I guess it's that preference for retail investors to trade what I like to call the familiar or the cyclical. And I think we're seeing that when I look at the types of stocks with highest activity levels.
That's so helpful. Thank you, Chris. So you're really citing three key drivers for turnover ratios there. One, the performance, the outperformance of the stock, which tends to draw in investors and hence increase the turnover ratios. Second of all, that presence of the retail investor, which arguably itself is linked to performance and outperformance, but again, increases the number of hands turning over a given stock. And then finally, that familiarity of the stock, that narrative or story behind the stock, which is often linked to what you call the familiar and the cyclical, and also right now linked to structural change, tech and AI. I think those themes are so often part of the narrative right now.
I think that makes complete sense. And it's not clear from the data yet whether it's just the retail investor driving that latter point. I also think it's entirely plausible that institutions are also catching on to these narratives and themes and trading these heavily as well.
Totally. I mean, the tech and the structural change mega themes, they dominate so many of our institutional investor conversations as well. And I think you could argue that there's much more of a free flow of information at this stage between the retail investor and the institutional investor. I mean, we're all looking at the same social media sources. We're all looking at the same press. There's more and more content available online, including podcasts, social media forums, etc. No surprise, perhaps, that multiple investor types are all alert to these same structural themes.
It's really interesting. I can't help wondering, with everybody sort of consuming the same information and subscribing to the same narratives, do you think there's a danger that you get a sort of a retail institutional groupthink emerging in this current environment?
I think groupthink, that is a risk. Having said that, we are in this period of immense technological structural change when we think about cloud compute, data centers, generative AI, the ability for corporates to adopt all of this. So we might be in a situation where there is groupthink around these massive themes, but we could still all be directionally correct. But anyway, bringing all of this together, bottom line is we have continued to see this increase in turnover ratios in the US versus the decrease in Europe. And I guess the new factor here is that we've seen much greater concentration in turnover ratios in the US in recent months and years versus less concentration here in Europe. And we've also continued to see a very high retail share of volume in US markets. So it all comes back to that virtuous cycle in the US versus vicious cycle in Europe, doesn't it? Where in the US, performance begets investor involvement, which begets liquidity, which begets performance, etc., versus the opposite in Europe, where we really see such a lack of investor involvement. And as you're saying, these themes seem to have only intensified over the last 6 months or so, intensified by the retail investor, intensified by the flow of information between retail and institutional investors, and intensified in the names where you have that story, that narrative linked to structural change, linked to familiar and cyclical qualities that you've been referring to. So, Chris, perhaps the most significant question I can ask you is, what on earth is going to break this cycle, both the cycle in the US and the cycle in Europe? I mean, what do you think?
Well, you're going to have to forgive me, but I'm probably going to have to throw at least part of this question back to you in the end. From a market structure perspective, in terms of what's going on to help increase liquidity and turnover ratios in Europe, there are lots of reforms in the pipeline, and kind of all of these have the right ideas, but in the end, there's just this really big risk that the kind of reforms that are really needed to enable Europe to compete with the US are just politically intractable. And even if they're not politically intractable, it's likely that they're going to play out over decades. So I don't think market structure is going to come to the rescue here. I'm not sure it ever has come to the rescue. But Eloise, my question for you would be whether there are other plausible reasons, perhaps to do with the maturing of AI technology, I guess, or you know, the way that technology cycle develops over time. And that might see this kind of sector and geographical concentration go into reverse.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I do think that that could be the fundamental reason that could eventually break this cycle of concentration in performance and liquidity in US markets and in a lot of these structural technological change names versus the opposite, the reverse going on in Europe. So the idea that there is a broadening of the technological benefits of AI to wider sectors outside of the tech universe as AI is adopted across the wider economy, whether across healthcare or utilities or cap goods or consumer sectors. And under that scenario, Europe as a tech underweight could possibly be the beneficiary of that trend. But I think that could take a very long time. It relies on the AI theme really fully playing out and constraints like chips and electricity being a big constraint, I think, for the AI theme in the coming years, not standing in the way of that. So I guess in the near term, it will be fascinating to hear if we get more information on these themes, on AI benefits rippling to the wider economy through Q1 results season right now. But my view is it could take years before this theme really plays out across the wider economy.
I think that's probably the case as well.
Yeah, and therefore this concentration in performance and liquidity could be quite persistent, could be here to stay over the coming months at least. So, Chris, final question. What will you be watching in the nearer term and this year as a whole to help navigate the path in turnover ratios and liquidity from here?
I think a couple of things. In the short term, I was discussing some of these data with my colleagues in the States, and we thought it would be interesting to try and bring in some other data sets and really to try to understand whether this sort of concentration is really a retail-only phenomenon, or is it, as we were talking about, is it a sort of a joint venture between retail and institutions that's kind of creating this pattern of trading? In the longer term, despite my comments about market structure not riding to the rescue, some of the data that I looked at in preparing for this discussion really tells a story about the impact of fragmented European markets. And this is particularly relevant when you think about the focus that policymakers in continental Europe and the UK have on supporting smaller growth enterprises. In both the US and Europe, the average small cap company is worth about $500 million. In the US, the average turnover for that same company is about $8 million a day, while in Europe, it's only $1 million. So European investment in growth enterprises gets hit twice. Firstly, the retail market, which favors domestic national shares ordinarily, is naturally fragmented and somewhat encouraged to stay that way by a similarly fragmented market structure. In turn, those lower turnover ratios for small cap shares make it much more difficult for institutional investors to participate due to the liquidity risks. So it's probably not going to be popular with everybody, but with my advocacy hat on, I'm going to continue to try to make the case that anything we can do to break down barriers in European capital markets is really important to their future.
Well, you've ended this discussion with some more amazing stats. I mean, the idea that comparably sized mid-cap company trades 8 times more in US markets than in European markets. It's just another staggering stat. So I really hope that your advocacy bears fruit and that we really do, over time, see those barriers in European capital markets broken down.
Thank you. I really hope so too.
Well, thank you so much, Chris. I mean, this has been a fun and an interesting discussion as always, and we've touched on so many of my favourite topics. The long-standing outperformance of US equities versus European equities, the divergence in liquidity trends across both those regions and those concentration stats in terms of liquidity in the US, they're just staggering. And we've also talked about the behaviour of the retail investor and their involvement here. So thank you so much, Chris, for taking the time to speak.
My pleasure, Eloise.
Thank you also to our listeners for tuning in to this bi-weekly podcast series from our group. If you have feedback or if you'd like to get in touch, then please do reach out directly to Chris Andrew or indeed contact your usual JP Morgan sales representative. Otherwise, please do go to our team website at jpmorgan.com/market-data-intelligence, where you can always reach out via the contact us form. And with that, we'll close. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Market Matters. If you've enjoyed this conversation, we hope you'll review, rate, and subscribe to JP Morgan's Making Sense to stay on top of the latest industry news and trends. Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and YouTube. necessarily reflect the views of JP Morgan Chase & Co. and its affiliates, together JP Morgan. They are not the product of a recommendation, advice, or an offer or a solicitation. It is intended for institutional and professional investors only and is not intended for retail investor use. It is provided for information purposes only. Reference to products and services in this podcast may not be suitable for you and may not be available in all jurisdictions. JP Morgan may make markets and trade as principal in securities and other asset classes and financial products that may have been discussed. For additional disclaimers and regulatory disclosures, please visit www.jpmorgan.com/disclosures/sales and trading disclaimer. For the avoidance of doubt, opinions expressed by any external speakers are the personal views of those speakers and do not represent the views of JP Morgan.